On June 6, 1918, the 40-year-old New Yorker Gunnery Sergeant Ernest A. Jansen charged more than a dozen German soldiers with just his bayonet. The charge nearly cost him his life, but it alerted his company to the Germans and helped win victory at the Battle of Belleau Wood. For his bravery, Jansen received the first Medal of Honor in World War I, and in 1921 became one of 8 men selected to bear the unknown soldier to his final resting place in Arlington National Cemetery. In his book, The Unknowns, The Untold Story of America's Unknown Soldier and the World War I's Most Decorated Heroes Who Brought Him Home, Patrick K. O'Donnell shares the stories of the body bearers and the war that forever changed the world. It's published by Atlantic Monthly Press, and I am pleased that it has brought Patrick to our show. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So you describe World War I as the most important event of the 20th century. I'm sure there are many people who do not argue that point, but what brings you to say that?
So much of our world, it was remade by these doughboys. The entire Middle East, for instance, was transformed by World War I. The world was remade by World War I in so many different ways. And that is a generation. I mean, for me, it was a generation that impacted me. I was, all the books that I've ever written have found me, and it's not cliche. I was embedded with the Marine Corps in the Battle of Fallujah, and they asked me to give a tour of Normandy as well as Belleau Wood. And as we were walking around Normandy and then later Belleau Wood, where the Marines had an epic stand that helped save Paris, it's there that I found the story of Ernest Jansen, who's this New Yorker. And Jansen was the first Medal of Honor recipient, but he was also a body bearer for the unknown soldier. And I immediately wanted to know more. Who were the other men? And what's, I think, compelling is that this hour, on this day, 100 years ago exactly, Ernest A. Jansen and his fellow compatriots, the Marines in the 2nd Division, were loading up into trucks to stave off defeat for the Allies and save Paris.
Remarkable point of timing. So what was the long-term impact of World War I as you see it?
I see it as something that is constantly impacting us today.
How so?
Well, for one, as I mentioned, the Middle East changed because of World War I. I think women's, there were a lot of positive things that came out of World War I, like women's suffrage, for instance, came out of World War I. International finance comes from World War I. There's just so many things that occur that flows from World War I. The modern military, for instance, goes from the Civil War kind of fighting tactics and Spanish-American War fighting tactics to a modern army, a modern navy, and a modern Marine Corps. These are all kind of forged in the crucible of World War I.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that separates World War I from all those previous battles is warfare and approach to warfare and technology. Tell us about some of those technologies that were developed in this war.
Oh, this is an incredibly brutal war that there was death on a massive scale, an industrial scale. There's the advent of high explosive artillery rounds, the machine gun, which could slay literally tens of thousands of people with one single gun. Poison gas, the advent of the tank, the airplane, and all of these weapons combining to form a more lethal form of warfare.
What were conditions like in the trenches? Because the trench warfare was a hallmark of this war, right?
It was. I mean, the unknowns kind of brings you there. It takes you into the trenches and into the different aspects of World War I. Many of these men literally had to live with lice and bugs on their body for weeks on end. There was disease that was rampant in the trenches. There was influenza. I mean, this is the time of a massive pandemic where, you know, the low estimate is 50 million were killed worldwide. It could have been over 100 million.
Wow. I'm D.W. Gibson speaking with Patrick O'Donnell about his book, The Unknowns, published by Atlantic Monthly Press. So where did the concept of the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier originate?
The tomb itself, the concept of the tomb, originates from European countries. It originates in France and England. They had, you know, such such a large amount of casualties that they wanted to honor those who had fallen, and those that there were a lot that were unknown, that were unidentified, and they wanted to honor all of the fallen with a tomb of the unknowns. And this is something that didn't occur in the United States in 1920, but there was a movement. A woman, editor of a popular women's magazine at the time, The Delineator, wrote to the War Department, said, look, we need to do something about this and have our own unknown soldier. And the War Department initially dismissed that, said, well, there's 2,200 Americans and we will probably identify them all. But there was a movement that was formed by the New York Times and the AP and grassroots. Hamilton Fish, also a congressman from New York, who was an officer in the Harlem Hellfighters. This is an African-American and Puerto Rican American unit that fought very bravely in France, spearheaded the effort to have a tomb, gets it through Congress, and then they decide to select four unknowns from each of the major cemeteries in France where the key battles were fought, like at Belle Wood, at the Meuse-Argonne, Saint-Mihiel, in the Somme. The remains were brought back to a city hall in Chalon, France, and they were basically a general officer was going to decide or choose the unknown soldier. But the last minute, the French came up to us and said, we used an enlisted man to choose. And that night, Edward Younger, whose story I detail in The Unknowns, right, was selected. He's just a doughboy, a grunt that goes through the major battles of the war, who's wounded twice, I mean, very severely. And he's given this awesome task and responsibility. That morning, he wakes up and he feels, just the weight of the world on his shoulders. And he's given a bouquet of roses and told to select the unknown. Goes into the room with four flag-draped caskets, and he literally is numb. He's not sure who to choose. He prays, and he paces, can't select, and then all of a sudden, it's almost like a guiding hand places the roses on the casket of an individual he said he felt that he was with when he went over the top.
Yeah, what a remarkably laden experience. So who were the men selected to carry the unknown soldier home?
These were Pershing's body bearers, and this is the heart of The Unknowns, the book that I wrote. These were eight of the most decorated enlisted men of the war. And General Pershing selected men from the Army, the Navy, and the Marine Corps. He wanted to have sort of an even hand, as well as the cavalry, the combat engineers, the field artillery, the heavy guns, and the infantry. The goal was to indirectly tell the story of the American Expeditionary Force through their eyes. And these are some of the most exceptional and, I think, interesting stories of the war. It's everything from the trenches to Charles Leo O'Connor, who's a boiler man in the bowels of the USS Mount Vernon, and his ship is struck by a torpedo, and literally tens of thousands of gallons of water are rushing in, and he has to make a split-second decision. Does he save the four men in the room, or does he save his ship, or does he save himself?
Wow.
And he has to close a watertight door before all is lost.
Did any of these men cross paths during the war?
They did. In several of the battles, they kind of cross paths. And this book tells the story of these individuals very cinematically and dramatically. And the through line of the book is also Ernest Jansen's 49th Company of the Marines, who fight in every major battle. But these guys link up indirectly. For instance, Corporal Thomas Saunders, who's a Native American Indian, and Native Americans are sort of treated stereotypically. They're looked at as indestructible and given some of the toughest jobs of the war. He's a scout, but also a wire cutter to breach the enemy wire, and he's sent out front. And he encounters Younger's group, for instance, and the field artillery support him. But these men cross paths, and Saunders' story is incredible. He's this Native American Indian that breaches the wire under, you know, certain death conditions, a forlorn hope, a suicide mission, and is able to capture 63 German prisoners practically single-handedly.
Was there a significant Native American role, generally speaking, in this war?
They were, I think that this book explores that sort of hidden history. Many of these men, strikingly, were not even American citizens, and they were still fighting for us. I mean, that's an incredible story. And they're there, they're fighting, they're incredibly heroic. And I think there's a very strong healing story with the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier as well. The tomb itself, Saunders is represented, and his grandfather and father fought against the United States in the Great War, Plains Indians. But Chief Plenicoos is the final man, the final individual to speak as the unknown is being buried. And he's a war chief, and he places his war staff and his bonnet, war bonnet feathers on top of the casket.
Tell us a little bit more about the process through which these eight body bearers were selected and chosen.
Each of the militaries had a chance, the Navy, the Army, and the Marine Corps had a chance to select literally scores and dozens of men. And they wanted individuals that had a significant combat record. Most of these men were, several of these men, I should say, were Medal of Honor recipients, such as Jansen or Samuel Woodfill, who single-handedly took out three machine gun nests and killed a German soldier that was trying to attack him with a pickaxe. But they also wanted to tell the larger story of the war through their eyes. And then on a more mundane level, they wanted each individual to be about 6 feet high. They wanted them to look good in a uniform.
Always practical matters. So what became of the body bearers after the war?
The book kind of it does chronicle their actions after the war. And, you know, most of these men just sort of melt into regular life. Some still are bearing the scars of this most deadly war, like all, combat veterans. And then several, like James Delaney and Samuel Woodfill, they volunteer again for World War II.
Well, how did most Americans view the war contemporaneously?
That's a difficult subject. It's... In some cases, there was animosity towards the war. It all depends on which perspective you're looking at and when you're looking at it.
How did events in the 20th century change the international dynamic? Or how did this war, change America's international dynamics?
Well, I think it becomes, I mean, this is the beginning of the American 20th century,
right,
from World War I, and that's one of the things that flows from it. It's, it's an extraordinary thing. The American Expeditionary Force was about the size of the Belgian Army before World War I in 1917, about 220,000 men. And it goes to 400,000 men. And it goes from an army from the Civil War and the Spanish-American War to a modern army. And that is an incredible, a massive game changer.
And we got into the war late. It's 1917. What role was the country playing before actually entering combat?
The role, we were a neutral power technically, but in many cases we were actually financing the war for the Allies. Much of the war finance and armaments was coming from the United States, and this is incredibly important to the Allies. They would have lost the war had it not been for the American role in finance and war materials.
So the American Expeditionary Forces were viewed in good light by the Allied forces. I mean, they'd already been fighting for 4 years, so sort of late to the game, but it was a welcome arrival.
They were exhausted. I mean, the Allies would have lost the war had the United States not become involved, and especially in terms of the financial piece. But the amount, the number of troops that came in changed everything, and the way that we fought, the American way of war, is exercised in France as well. And the Germans were used to fighting adversaries that were exhausted, but the Americans, in many cases, would keep pressing on when the Germans thought that was impossible or suicidal. And they were literally terrified of American troops.
Well, it's a remarkable story, and it's a great example of history being brought to life with pulse and lives and names. Thank you so much, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be here.
I've been speaking with Patrick O'Donnell about his new book, The Unknowns, published by Atlantic Monthly Press.